Sure thing. Thanks, Cliff. I'll cover a few things that are new. Cliff touched on one of them. But, you know, there is a lack of appetite on hedge funds to enter the space. Back in 2015, 2016, 2017, there was a real view that there was kind of a mispricing going on between where the commodity was and where energy companies were trading and the opportunities that lay ahead for those companies. So you had a lot of hedge funds entering the sector, buying up the debt, becoming the fulcrum security, taking over E&P companies in particular, and then hoping for a massive run-up. There was a lot of optimism in 2017. You saw a lot of services companies, you know, seek to go public. You saw a lot of E&P companies coming out of bankruptcy with new owners, with lots of hope in their minds and hearts. And then that all kind of cratered and fell away earlier this year. And I think so many people have been burned on E&P investments, particularly these hedge funds, that they're just not there anymore. The hedge funds are staying away this time. They're not really interested in moving in and taking the debt and becoming the fulcrum security. They don't want to own these companies. I'm, of course, speaking in generalities. I think there are some circumstances where, you know, people are identifying opportunities at E&P companies that may be moving into bankruptcy, but there's a real absence of a bid, as we might say. There's just no one out there wanting to take these companies. That kind of gets us to the RBL impairments. In the last section of this kind of downturn, I mean, all the RBL lenders came out at 100%. And, you know, they were getting made whole. The bonds were getting some return and the equity was essentially getting flushed as they normally do. But we're seeing a lot of E&P companies now where the RBL is impaired. So the first lien may be getting, you know, 60 cents on the dollar, 80 cents on the dollar, something less than 100. Certainly not always the case, but there are a lot more RBL impairments now than there used to be. That kind of gets us to the chapter 22s and 29s that Cliff mentioned. You know, a lot of people went in and they came out with just way too much debt. So there was this, you know, concept in 2016, 2017 that there needed to be a significant amount of take back debt, which is, you know, debt that the existing debt holders agreed to retain in the company. And that was just too high. And so, you know, a lot of these E&P companies were overlevered coming out of the last downturn. The commodity price movements didn't go in their favor. And now they're entering again into Chapter 11. Some of them are actually moving into Chapter 7, which I guess is how Cliff gets to 29. You know, we have some services clients that, you know, in the last go-around would have survived, and now they're going Chapter 7. I mean, BJ Services is a great example. It has been a challenging capital market for these companies. There's basically no equity market access except for some of the best companies. So the equity markets are effectively closed and the debt capital markets are not available either. In 2016, 2017, there were a lot of exchange offers. So you had bondholders who were unsecured trading their debt for secured bonds and taking a discount. So they might have $1,000 worth of debt and they of unsecured debt, they would trade that for $500 worth of secured debt. That's not really happening now. A lot of these exchange offers have failed. I think the bondholders are realizing that, you know, this is kind of in a lot of ways a lost cause. They would rather either hold out for getting, you know, made whole at par if commodity prices move up, or they'll just take their chances on the downside. So you're not really seeing the ability to restructure debt out of court like you did in the 2015 through 2017 timeframe. And I would say that the recovery in demand is much more uncertain. I mean, there was news out of OPEC today, which is moving a lot of companies up, that the worst is over for the oil markets, but there is a lot more demand uncertainty, particularly with COVID. There's not a lot of flying. There's not a lot of driving. I think those metrics are improving somewhat, but they're still at multi-year lows, multi-decade lows. And so, you know, I think the demand recovery is also challenging. And, you know, frankly, we're two more years toward renewables. We're two more years toward electrification of the automobile system. And while those things are still further off, I think, you know, they're real now. People can feel them. there's even more dislike for this industry. And so that's making, you know, the bankruptcy situation and the recovery that much harder. I mean, most investors just don't want to own these stocks. They'd rather own Amazon or Microsoft or something that, you know, that has kind of better upside over the long term. So, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of things are different. There are a number of things that are the same, as Cliff mentioned. But I think now I'll turn it over to Rob and he can go through a few more things related to
kind of. Hey, Sean, before Rob starts, I want to ask you, you talked, you know, in the last downturn, you said some of the hedge funds were bullish and kind of moved into the space. We also saw some smaller size private equity funds spin out of the larger ones in hope of taking advantage of smaller market opportunities. What do you think needs to change to enable there to be a kind of a contrarian approach where people start wanting to move more aggressively into the space? What needs to change from where we are now?